Hi there, it's 12:06. I'm Mary Lynn.
Good afternoon, Diane Ducey here.
And here to connect with us now about some state news. We'd like to call him our Springfield watchdog. He's also a Republican candidate for State Senate, John Bambanek. How are you, John?
I'm having more fun than a man should be allowed to have. How are you?
Yeah. Well, I think we are too. So, yeah. Except we're not a man.
Right.
So, you know, no. We're having more fun than a man should have too. And we'll put it that way. Okay. So, the legislature back in session this week, and a couple of things that we wanted to connect with you about. There's a deal on taxes. Which helps out big business, but you don't think it helps out the little guy. So we're going to talk about that here in a moment. Gambling is another big one that's, that you think that they're going to touch base on this week. What are you hearing? You know, it seems like this would be good for Danville.
Well, it would be neutral or the cost that way. The benefits is a subject of some debate. But what happens is that they passed this gambling expansion in May. Quinn indicated he'd veto it, but never really participated in the legislative process. Well, a few weeks ago he says, okay, here are all my problems with it. And what legislators did is encapsulate those items he had a problem with into amendment to the bill. So what they're doing is basically saying, okay, here are the governor's objections. We're going to pass something to deal with those. I think it's important to know the governor has still not participated in that process. So what he ends up doing on this bill remains subject to some debate. Nobody can tell you that but Pat Quinn. I tend to think that Pat Quinn is probably committed to kill this legislation. But time will say. I could be wrong. I'm not in his head, and he certainly doesn't let me know what he's going to do.
Most of the time Chicago annoys me, but it seems like the pressure from Chicago to get this gambling bill passed, I was kind of actually hoping that that would help out. If for once, that might actually help downstate.
Well, as you do, Mayor Rahm Emanuel of Chicago is very committed to this legislation, is putting a lot of pressure on the governor to get it passed, and legislation that would include Danville, the casino in Danville, and some of the slots at county fairs and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, in order to pass an expansion of gaming, you really need to get a lot of disparate interests involved. I mean, Chicago wants a casino of their own, so you've got Chicago. There has to be something for the horse racing industry, so you get, some agriculture, some of the county fair votes, slots at the track, so you get, Arlington and Hawthorne racetracks on board. The existing casino owners who are worried that more casinos will hurt their revenue, and rightfully so, because gambling is in a deep recession in our state right now. So adding more slots, more positions, more casinos is cutting a shrinking pie into more slices. It took a lot of grand compromise to put this together, and it's been in the works for probably near a decade. We're really left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth as a governor not participating in the process, and then heavy-handedly just slapping it down and still not participating in the process. It'd be one thing if he has things he wants to advance, sits down, and negotiates. But, one of his particular problems is that he's governing by press release and invective, and it's really causing a lot of problems in just how our state operates day-to-day.
Okay. That's interesting. So ultimately, if he does nothing or if he vetoes it, then no casino for Danville, and our tax dollars can just continue to go across the state lines to Indiana. Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't think we'll get to a 3/5 majority in both chambers. A veto override is a possibility, and not say to not give up hope in that. But, in my mind, gambling expansion casino for Danville is kind of a quick fix, short-term solution. And what we really need to do is look down the road, come up with solutions that are going to work for the next 10, 20, 30 years, not the ones that are going to work, make us feel better for the next 6 months.
Okay.
And that's what's really lacking in Springfield.
All right. And jobs and getting businesses wanting to hire, that is one thing that could certainly help long-term. And so we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about a deal that's on the table to help out business, but will it help small business? We'll connect about that next with John Bambanek on 93.5, 95.3, the new Connect FM. catch up when you wake up. Listen for the Wall Street Journal this morning, weekdays 5 to 7, Saturdays at 6. We're 93.5, 95.3, the new Connect FM. It's 12:13. Hi there, I'm Mary Lynn.
And I'm Diane Ducey.
You know what's happening right now? I'm looking at my phone. I am installing the Connect FM 93.5, 95.3 app on my Android phone.
Excellent. Your phone is a radio now.
Yes, I am so excited. And we'll have more details for you. But whether you have a BlackBerry, an Android, an iPhone, you can download the Connect FM app. You just go to your app store like I did, and I just typed in Connect FM altogether.
Okay.
And the app came up, and I clicked install, and I'll keep you posted. But it looks like it's installed already, but, you know, I'll wait for a commercial break to test it out.
Okay.
We're talking about some important stuff here right now with John Bambanek, Republican candidate for state Senate. You can find him at johnbambanek.com. And John, you've kind of been our Springfield watchdog, letting us know what's going on, and we appreciate that. There's a deal on the table that's really being considered. Seems like there's some support for this bill, which will help out businesses when it comes to taxes. What's the good of this bill? What's the bad of this bill?
Well, you know, essentially it's being billed as revenue neutral, which means for every cut, there's an offset of revenue coming in. You know, so from the word go, the important thing to realize, there is no spending cuts that will fund this tax relief. That was not discussed at all, which is a very big problem. More on that later. The CME Group, which owns the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the Chicago Board of Trade.
Of course, we're back to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that company pays 6% of the overall corporate taxes collected by the state of Illinois. Mm. And they think that's unfair. And there's some weight to that argument. You know, they pay taxes on trades that are really originated and processed either outside of Illinois or internationally. But because they have a building here and the way the corporate tax is structured, they have to pay Illinois taxes on those versus something else.
Mm-hmm.
And Sears wants a reinstatement of their edge tax credit. There's a research and development tax credit that a lot of people want to see come back. So when businesses invest in research, they get some tax benefits from that. So there's a handful of breaks like that.
Okay.
And there's an increase in the earned income tax credit and personal income exemption. So there's some benefits for the working poor, essentially.
What about small business? I've heard some things that sound good for the, you know, the big companies that hire a lot of people in our state, the working poor. What about small business owners who got socked with this, you know, increase in corporate taxes?
Well, that was a conversation I had with a Springfield insider Monday night when this deal came out. He said, hey, this is great, revenue neutral, everybody's happy with it. And I'm like, you know what, $700 million's going out the door. Somebody's paying for that in this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And when they find out who it is, they're going to be pissed. And really, it is small and medium business that's going to pick up the tab because, you know, if you're a small five-man shop, you're not going to be doing R&D. Your garbage collector isn't going to be doing research and development and new and fancier ways to run a garbage truck. And that's not criticism. That's just the way the business is. And this is, again, using our corporate tax code to pick specialized interests to get benefits that the rest have to fund. And since we're talking about corporate tax, that's really the brunt of it is. So a few businesses are going to get benefited. Small to medium businesses are going to get bigger tax bills. And
so, no, wait a minute, bigger than what they already have? You think that will the corporate tax rate go up, or is it that they're going to get stuck with the bill because ultimately what's been sold to us as temporary will stay forever?
Well, I think the prevailing attitude in most of the Democratic, or certainly with the Democratic Party and some Republicans who won't admit it publicly, is to keep these tax increases permanently.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another story. This is funded by decoupling a tax credit instituted by the federal government, because usually the state and federal tax codes are coupled so that various things go in tandem, so you don't have to rearrange things and have kind of divergent tax codes. It's nice because it keeps things simple. It creates problems sometimes when Washington does things and they're not even looking at the impact on state tax code, and, you know, all of a sudden they blow holes in budgets. That aside, one of the things Washington did is usually when you buy real property, you know, say cars, buildings, things of that sort, you can write off that expense as depreciation over several years instead of taking it all in 1 year. The federal government said, okay, you can take your purchases all in 1 year to incentivize people to make these big purchases, particularly business. The state is decoupling so that you have to go back to paying that depreciating it over time. So instead of getting that tax break all at once, it's back to getting it over a series number of years. I'm trying to simplify it because it's kind of complicated.
Now I'm starting to understand how that'll affect small businesses and medium-sized businesses, because they're the ones who are going to buy the, you know, buy that that vacant lot over there and put their facility on it.
Or more importantly, they've already made those purchases based on the fact that that tax break was there, and this goes back retroactively to January 1st. So they made a purchase based on one set of rules, and they're talking about changing it out from underneath them. So again, I mean, the thing that businesses crave is some kind of stability. Now you're talking about them making decisions based on something, and then you're turning around making it retroactive so that the facts on the ground have changed out from underneath them, and they had no ability to react. They had no ability to plan. They planned on one set of rules, and then it got changed retroactively on them.
Wow.
So many businesses will be screwed anyway because, like I said, they might have made different decisions had
they known what was coming.
Exactly. And they don't have a seat at the table. They don't have a seat in Springfield. They don't have influence. You know, but the other thing about this deal is, you know, permanent tax, not permanent tax breaks, but long-term tax breaks, short-term, you know, offsets. So this decoupling really only pays for this bill in the first year. In the second and third years, it blows another $400 million hole in the budget. So
we just
created a bigger deficit that we're going to have to pay.
It seems, it seems like a lot of legislators are on board with this. So this is probably going to go through?
Well, a lot of this stuff started to break last night and today, and people are starting to see this. The CME, for instance, is like, hey, listen, you know, we want our standalone bill. This tax break bill is becoming what's known as a legislative Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants their present underneath it. So, you know, everybody's kind of feeding at the trough. And reality is, again, nobody is talking about spending cuts. Nobody is talking about reining in, you know, the programs, growth of programs, any number of things that could save real money. That we're really talking about, we're going to increase, you know, 90% of Illinois' businesses' tax burden so we can give the other 10% a tax break.
So we can lose more jobs and have more people move out of the state.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. And we do it in such a way that it blows almost a half billion dollar hole in the budget next year.
Wow.
Another quick fix, short-term plan. Let's do something now to make it okay, and then we'll go down to next year. We're past the point of doing quick fixes.
Okay.
We need to take a long-term view, figure it out of what not only works in the next 6 months, but the next 10 years, the next 20 years, what's going to work to get Illinois going in the right track so that our children will have, you know, a brighter future than we have.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you know, another big thing that's on the table and that is being considered is some pension reform.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll chat about that with John Bambanek next. And it is 12:21 at Connect FM.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Frank Cipolla.
We are 93.5, 95.3, the new Connect FM. Hi there. It is 12:25. I'm Mary Lynn.
42 outside and windy. I'm Diane Ducey.
And we've been talking with John Bambanek to try and get some, you know, he's our Springfield watchdog.
Sure.
And the legislature back in session. We've touched on gambling. We've touched on the latest tax deal, which ultimately seems to help out big business, but not small business. And now let's talk about pension reform.
Oh, boy.
An overhaul of the state's pension system is long overdue.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like in Illinois, House Committee has advanced some pension legislation. Can you give us the lowdown on that?
Okay. Well, essentially, you know, as history, there's three concurrent problems with the pension system in Illinois. The first is the state has not put in their matching contribution in full or at all for
right.
decades.
Right.
The second is some of the pension abuses and spite we see. you know, most of the employees don't take advantage of this, can't take advantage of this, but that's what you see in the news. The head of the Illinois Federation of Teachers substitute teachers for one day, then collects a teacher government pension for 25 years of service as a union boss. That's completely unfunded, where if that ever happened in the private sector, people would be doing serious jail time.
Exactly.
You know, but there's sweeteners, too, usually traded for political support. You look over the past 40 years, the legislature stepped in and, I will give you this extra pension benefit here, extra pension benefit here. You know, it's a million here, a million there, and then all of a sudden you're talking about real money. And then the third is simply the actuarial sustainability. If you retire at 65 but you live longer, that pension actually costs more and has to be funded. More. So some of those considerations. And the current pension bill is mostly directed at that third one, but also kind of wraps in some of the underfunding, the chronic underfunding that's happened. It's unclear if the bill is moving or not. This bill has been debated and kind of been floating since the beginning of the year. You know, it establishes a three-tier pension system that if you want to keep your current defined benefit pension, which is what everybody thinks of a pension, you'll have to contribute more to it, or you can go to a more 401k system. You get to keep what you've earned, but going forward, it would establish these three tiers. And there's some degree of controversy regarding it. It really comes back to sort of the debates about whether changing benefits is constitutional. Government pensions are protected by the state constitution. So as such, like I said, it only deals with, it doesn't deal with the pension problem in total. It deals with one problem and then kind of wraps in the that pension funding into it. Like I said, anytime you talk about pensions, it is extremely controversial. But on the flip side, it is a problem that needs to be addressed somehow. And we're running out of time and money to do it. I believe the next 4 years, our pension liability of just making the annual payments goes up by $1.5 billion to $2 billion.
Yeah, I was just reading some numbers out of the Chicago Trib that were written last night. Pensions in the next state budget will be $900 million higher than this year's more than $6 billion price tag for annual contributions and borrowing costs.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Right, and I mean, this kind of goes back 15 years. 15 years ago, we realized, oh man, we've been underfunding the pensions for a while. That's a problem. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to maintain the status quo for 15 years, and then we're going to start an aggressive ramp up to pay that money back.
Yeah.
Well, genius. Yeah. And that's what we're facing now, where, you know, really, that problem staying the same in 4 years when this tax increase is scheduled to expire, not only will, you know, assuming the status quo, not only will we not be able to expire, we're going to have budget deficits again without significant cuts simply to make that pension payment. And it really comes down to the fact of the state, the General Assembly specifically, knowing what they needed to put in and not doing it, putting off till tomorrow. And here we are a couple decades later. Most of those people are dead or gone. And we're faced with a cost, one way or the other, to deal with a problem that they created, which is why long-term solutions need to be done. As far as my model for reform, I like the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund system, which is that's a pension system for states, or not cities, counties, some of these units of local government. And what that system does, it's because of market conditions, it's actually not as funded as it usually is. It's around 80% the last I saw, but normally it's 100% funded all the time. Because they make the employing agency pay in real time full actuarial cost of the pensions. Mm-hmm. You do a spiking game, okay, well, IMRF doesn't care. They're just going to make you pay up. And going to using some elements of that model, I mean, you can't really adopt that model for state employees, but you can use elements of it where, say, okay, you're hiring, you know, these people. You need to pay the full pension contribution, and if you don't, the pension system, the employer, and the union, if it's a unionized, can take you to court and get the money. You cannot sue the General Assembly for an appropriation, but if U of I owes you something, you can go to court to enforce that and get that money. And that transition is not as simple as it sounds. There are some difficulties with that that can be worked through. It has to be done in a planned and coordinated way over the course of several years. But that deals with that underfunding problem. Four decades of not putting in their match. It shows that you cannot trust the General Assembly to do their duty, to do the budget right, you know, and you can't enforce it. You can do nothing about it. except, you know, wait until the problem balloons out of control. And right now it's ballooned out of control. So this would help stop that. It would end that problem. And like I said, it's not an easy transition that has some fair amount of complications, but it deals with, you know what, the employing agency, the one making the pay decisions, has to pay the full cost of the employment. That way they don't say, hey, you know what, we're going to treat you nice and we're going to make some guy who's not in the room pay the bill. That needs to end. And you'll start seeing a little bit better salary and pension decisions. But more importantly, you'll be able to make sure that that employer contribution makes it to the pension fund and keeps growing going forward, so that in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, the money is there.
Sounds like a very good solution. And John is trying to get to Springfield to be able to suggest those types of solutions. And you can learn more about John at johnbambanek.com. He is Republican candidate for state Senate, our Springfield watchdog. We thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you very much for having me. Always enjoy it.
All right. It's 1232 here at 93.5, 95.3, the new Connect FM.